Welcome to Women Empower Active, an initiative started by UR Sportswear to empower women to find their own active adventure. I'm your host, Jacqueline Gross. Today, we are doing a rebroadcast where I am co-hosted with my good friend, Erica Mann, who is a former teammate of mine. She is a marketer, an actress, a model, just an all-around amazing individual. And we are both interviewing my sister, Jennifer Gross, who inspired me to start running alongside my other sister, Catherine, who is her twin, and of course, my mom, who is in another episode of Women Empower Active that we did last year. So you get to meet all my family. And then we are going to talk about how Jennifer got into running and climbing and jiu-jitsu and boxing and kickboxing. And then also, it's been so cool to see her inspiring her young daughter to then also be active with her, which I think is so cool. And I'm getting super excited to see them. Probably by the time you're listening to this episode, I will be in Michigan enjoying their company. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I had so much fun recording it, and it's very funny, but within the first 5 minutes, I basically asked my sister how babies are made. So I hope you enjoy that. It was one of my first episodes interviewing, so it's just very awkward, and you're welcome. Hope you enjoy this episode. I would like to ask you about your athletic background to start.
In terms of my background, I've been a runner for most of my life. More recently, within the past couple of years, I've gotten involved with boxing and then mixed martial arts and then jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I've sort of become obsessed with those sports recently. But, you know, they're just, and I've done rock climbing. I've probably been a runner throughout all of those things, but more recently, I probably have done a lot more martial arts than anything. So that would be kind of my background. And before that, in high school, I swam, I played volleyball. So I've kind of done a lot of, I'm well-rounded, I guess, in terms of experience level.
A lot of fun. All great. Yeah. Things. You talked about jiu-jitsu. I did jiu-jitsu like on the side. I was not very serious, but would have loved to have been serious. What made you decide to do jiu-jitsu?
Well, it was kind of a progression. It started with boxing. I started boxing, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago now. Like I said, time tends to run together for me, but it's been a while now. I started boxing at Title Boxing in Brighton. I live in Hull, but I work in Brighton, Michigan. And I became obsessed with it. I really liked the stress relief of hitting a bag. And so one of the trainers there was an amateur MMA fighter. He had told me about this gym, a Scorpion Fighting System. And that was in Brighton. That was primarily a Brazilian jiu-jitsu academy. They had, they trained martial arts fighters. They have amateur fighters and they have professional fighters, but they also had classes for people who were just interested in learning technique. So I was really intimidated by going there, and I really didn't want to because I have a hard time trying new things. But he convinced me to go there and try a class, and everybody was just super welcoming, and it was, I just became addicted to it. And the thing I think I like about it is, it's similar to rock climbing in the way that it's sort of like, it's problem solving. Like people will call it like the chess of martial arts, because you have to, you know, it's really all about body mechanics and technique and strategy, especially at the higher levels. Obviously I'm not at that level where I can really try to, you know, like people that are black belts or, you know, even higher belt levels are able to get people to, fall into traps essentially. But, so there's a lot of thinking involved in it. I just really, it appealed to me. It was just, and it's also like, it's like wrestling, but with less you know, just pounding someone into the ground, more like finesse involved. So it combined the physicality that I love. I love the physical contact, but it also is just really intellectual, I guess. It sounds weird to say, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And then through that too, you got pregnant with Eva. How did you manage that?
Yes, through jiu-jitsu, actually. You got to be careful. They didn't tell me that when I when we started. You got to be careful when you're rolling with people.
I didn't mean it that way.
No, I'm ever picking that back up again.
Oh, that's hilarious. Good one.
Yeah, so I know what you mean. it just came out like I accidentally, like, I don't know, something happened.
Yeah.
Yes, I did get pregnant, not from jiu-jitsu. No, I started, so I was, while I was doing jiu-jitsu, I was also learning martial arts. And at the time, that gym had a women's martial art, mixed martial arts class and program, and women that were, it was really nice because there were women who knew nothing about wrestling or, you know, things that were elements of MMA. And then there'd be women who were teaching the class that were, UFC fighters. I mean, we had a UFC fighter teaching the class. We had a girl who was like almost wrestled. She was like almost Olympic caliber wrestler who was teaching wrestling. And, you know, so there was these people, and she's now the world champion at atom weight, which is 105. So she's tiny, but she's a tiny girl, but because she's so good, she could just like, she could do whatever she wanted to basically pin you anyway, because she's just really, really good wrestler. So there was a high caliber of instruction. And so it was really nice. So I kind of became addicted to it, but I wanted to perfect my technique. And I've worked with several trainers to help me perfect my technique. But one of the trainer that I worked with, ended up working with the most, which is now my daughter's father, Josh Parisian, he's a UFC fighter. He was recently signed to the UFC, but he's been a professional mixed martial arts fighter for a while. So anyway, I was working with him, and, you know, one thing led to another. We started dating eventually, and then that's where Eva came from. But but yes, it was originating. Okay. That's how the gym ties into it, but yeah, so, and then I had to contend with trying to be an athletic person while pregnant, which was a whole other challenge. I had to stop doing jiu-jitsu for a while, or I didn't stop entirely, because Josh is a brown belt, so he would do some sort of pregnancy friendly workouts with me, but you can't do what the typical kind of roll, they call it rolling, which is basically like live matches. So you can't do that past like 8 weeks pregnant, more or less, because it can be dangerous for the baby. So I had to stop doing it for a while. And now with COVID, I haven't been going to live classes right now, because although our gym is open, I'm not ready to do that right now. So
makes sense.
I miss it though.
Right.
Yeah.
So during this time when it is shut down, and after pregnancy and everything, what have you been able to do, like, and to stay motivated? Because when COVID is like, when things open up and we feel more comfortable going back out, you probably want to stay more in shape to get back into things. So how are you staying motivated?
That's a good question. I struggled with that while I was pregnant. Before the shutdown happened, I was still going to the gym, and I was doing a lot of boxing. That's pretty much all I was doing. And I was also doing something, what I was calling running, but it was like very, very modified running, like fast, like slow jogging. but I was doing like long distance, slow running, and then after everything shut down, that's all I was doing. I have a heavy bag hung in my garage, so I was hitting that every once in a while. The pregnancy hormones mean that your hips are really flexible, so I was able to keep doing kickboxing and stuff until pretty much until Eva was born, but the running, it was pretty much kind of what I did during the shutdown. And then after, motivation in terms of jujitsu was challenging, but honestly, it's I think the biggest motivation to keep learning and keep improving, because really it is, you know, to keep drilling or to keep watching videos or whatever. Sometimes it can get, you know, the drilling part is boring, but that's the part people skip because they want to get to the rolling, to the live sessions, and that's the fun part. And the drilling is what you really don't want to do. And when you're pregnant, all you can do is drill. So my partner Josh, he was really motivating and getting me, like, setting aside a certain amount of time to teach me new things or review things. Even when I really wasn't feeling like it, he would motivate me to do that. Or, like, you know, we have certain people that, like, there's a girl at the gym that, you know, I have, he would do like a session with her for free. He charges people usually to do training. I mean, I get free training, but like, he does know what he's doing, and, he's professional. I mean, so he's a brown belt. So people will pay him, you know, as a trainer. So he would offer like a free lesson to some of the people that we knew and we felt more comfortable with, in terms of doing drilling, because he's a heavyweight. I mean, he's 260, 270 pounds. So there's certain things that just don't work super well drilling with him. So for those types of things, he's even like arranged for me to have partners that are not maybe going to an open rolling session, but people who are already in our circle in terms of the, you know, the transmission of whatever. But so the motivation, I guess, has been, he's helped motivate me to stay drilling and stay working on the things that are more boring, to be prepared for when things are not as boring. But so I think that's part of the motivation. And then just trying to, in general with fitness, I think is the mental health aspect is more important than ever right now. So I think that's also been a huge motivating factor to be consistent, because it's not an option to not do anything.
Right. No, right. That's so true. And that's so cool that you have someone around you that helps support you.
Yeah, it is. I think it would be really hard to stay motivated without that. And I just wouldn't. I mean, there are videos, you can watch videos, but when you don't have somebody that can help you drill something or work something through, then it's harder to really fully understand it. And he's just a really good teacher, so he helps me with that. I mean, then we always goof around and things like that. Like when we're in the kitchen or something, he'll try to, like, you know, get an underhook on me, which is like, you know, like get in a good position to try to take my back or like take me down. I mean, we're goofing around. He's not really going to do it, but it's like sort of like a practice to like, what do I do in response to that kind of thing.
So cute. So fun.
Jenny's always training.
Yeah.
Right?
I know always. He does it. I swear he does it. I'll be in the kitchen like making dinner or like getting the baby's food ready or something like that, and he'll be like, you know, practicing his like kicks and stuff on, like, not really obviously throwing kicks because he would murder me, but like he like will throw, like, you know, pretend like he's gonna come at me with a knee, and I'm like, I'm putting on my defense to that, and like sometimes I'm not about it, but but it is fun sometimes. So
do you have any goals coming into 2021, or even maybe not timely?
As far as goals go, it's sort of hard in terms of my running goals, because I'm just in such a different place than I was, you know, this time last year. Like, I was pregnant, and I'm smashing my time goals and things because I, from last year, because I just am not, you know, 7 months pregnant, you know, when I'm trying to do it. But I one of my big goals is I really want to, I've started lifting weights a little bit more. I'd like to try to do several times a week to try to increase my muscle mass and my strength and stuff, because I noticed when I was doing a lot of the boxing, I really you know, my upper body was a lot stronger, but I wasn't doing any specific lifting, so that I was really not getting, you know, I was not getting that full body effect and core strength and stuff like that. So I think improving my strength would be a goal that I have. As far as my goals for races and whatnot, I would love to be able, I mean, my friend Tina and I have competed in quite a few of those Spartan races that are like the obstacle races, and those are really challenging. You need to be good at a lot of things that I wasn't. So I was like before I had Eva, I was training for that, like with pull-ups. There's a lot of hand strength, upper body strength, things that I just wasn't typically good at, that I was training at. And I would like to run one of those again and be able to do every obstacle, which I've only ever been able to do once recently, right? Not recently, but the most recent race I had in Colorado. And that was not this past August, but the August before, you know, before all this stuff happened. So anyway, the point is I'd like to do that again, but that's really dependent on whether or not things open up, you know, next summer. But I'd ideally like to do another race next summer and feel good about it and feel strong. So that's kind of my way to work toward that, is just building my strength in the interim. Decrease the amount of, ever since I started breastfeeding, I've been putting on body fat, and I want to decrease that eventually, but that's going to have to wait until at least either when Eva's a year old or when she weans herself, or, you know, so whatever comes first. So that, because when you're breastfeeding, I didn't really learn a lot about this until after, but you have to, your body wants to keep on a certain amount of body fat, particularly around your arms and your upper body. But if you don't, your production will go way down, and because your body thinks it's like, that doesn't have enough resources for the baby. So I've had to reframe what my goals are after having her in light of that, because I'm still, you know, supporting her health with my body, even though she's not inside me anymore. So interesting. Yeah, it shaped my goals, because it's like you have to be really cognizant of those things, and taking vitamins and drinking enough water, which is good for me, but you have to just slam water, because your body, especially when I was in Arizona recently, it's very dry. You have to be really aware of it, because your body will respond to not having enough water. And, you know, I mean, there's always options, there's always formula, and we've had to supplement with that, but, you know, it's just a different thing to think about, and I've never obviously done it before. So trying to give myself space to be active, but not expect to push my body too hard, because I don't want to negatively impact her. But I mean, she's 8 months old now, so we're getting pretty close anyway.
True. As now a mommy to a young little girl, how do you plan to like cultivate her actively?
That's a great question. It's something, you know, having a child makes you think a lot about the things that you experienced growing up and the things that you liked and didn't like, and what you definitely don't want to bring forward into your family that you create, or your family culture. But there are things that you do want to bring forward into your family culture. And one of the things that I do like about the way that we were raised was, you know, my mom prioritized exercise and fitness for herself. It was something that she needed to do for her own mental health. And I have been around group families where that isn't, you know, when we have family gatherings, it's like everybody's got to get their run in for the day, or everybody's going to get their workout in, and that's sort of expected. But when I've been around other people, they sort of think that's, oh, you have to run today? You have to do that? That's just our thing. It's like getting up and having coffee and doing, you know. And so I think that sort of, to me, I don't feel like it's, and it's something that my partner, Eva's father, also admires, but that wasn't a part of his family culture growing up. So I think for me, I start to think about how did that get instilled in me? And I just think, you know, my mom was prioritizing that for herself, making sure she had time for it. And yes, she might've had to adjust it like I do. Like I might have to go work out at 6 a.m. because I've got to go to work after, and then Eva's sleeping at 6 a.m. So that might not be my ideal workout time, but I'll do it because that's when I can know I can get it in. So I think seeing her watch me prioritize myself and my time will show her that that's something that it's important for her to prioritize. And I definitely want to also have her try some sports. I'm not going to force her to do something she doesn't want to do, but certain things, I think there's so many opportunities out there, especially around here, for a lot of different sports that I just didn't know about, like jiu-jitsu being one of them. Growing up, I didn't know anything about that. I mean, a lot of kids here play lacrosse. There's the ski hill. Like, I mean, hopefully she picks a cheaper hobby than skiing, but like if she wants to ski, that's there for her.
Right.
You know, I feel like that watching us and her dad, I mean, what he does right now for a profession is, you know, he's a UFC fighter. Eventually he's not going to be doing that as a profession, but he'll probably own a gym or have some sort of profession that's related to fitness. So I think that'll also give her an exposure to that life and those values. So I'm hoping that that's enough. You know, maybe her way of rebelling will be not to be interested in any of it, in which case that's fine, but at least she'll see us, you know, making that a priority in life. And I always will. And that's one thing that I've always tried to do for myself is at least have some time out of the day that's me time that I get to exercise. And I think that can't help but, you know, but make an impact on her.
Yeah, no, that sounds excellent. Like an excellent idea and thought process. So that's pretty cool. I'm sure she'll find that very motivating.
Yeah, well, she goes, yeah, and she might have memories of running with me because my family got me this awesome running stroller for Christmas before she was born. And I mean, I take her out. I mean, now not so much. When we had a little bit warmer weather in Michigan, I took her for a run, but when I was in Arizona, you know, I would run with her every day. And yeah, she's only 8 months old, but that stroller will fit her until she's like five. So she'll probably have some memories running with me and, you know, going with me. And I think that'll be pretty cool for her. The underlying message too is making time for what's important to her, and that it's, she's got to take time for herself too, because that's what exercise is for me. Whether that's what it is to her or not, I think that's valuable.
There was this article you had posted that really impacted me. And it was kind of like, regardless of like how you look, you still have like a right to be here. And especially like the place that I worked before, it was very obvious that, you know, when I went to work that I was expected to look a certain way, and that mm-hmm. the guys who also worked with me weren't held to that standard. I mean, they would show up in like sweatpants or something like that and still get a much more respect than I would as a woman.
Yeah. What resonated with me about it, and when I leave my house to do anything, or when I go to work, or when I interact with anyone, when I, you know, get on any video conference, you know, I think, you know, I have to put makeup on. I have to look a certain way. And if I don't, then there's something wrong with that. I think the post was making the point that that's not the price that we have to pay in order to exist. Is beauty is not the price you have to pay, or being done up, or whatever, however you want to phrase it. And I think that that is absolutely true, but it's sort of something that I feel like I need to put on my mirror in the morning so I see it every day. It's one of those truths that is true. And when you hear it, it really resonates with you, but it's going against an entire lifetime for most of us of socialization to feel the opposite, that we don't deserve to be present in a place if we're not dressed up enough, or if we're not, you know, I know in my profession, I'm an attorney, as you know, and, you know, there's certain things where a client, or even if I'm not seeing clients, like there's just an expectation of being presented in a certain way. And I, one of my schoolmates in law school, she graduated, I think, a year earlier than me. So she's a year before me in law school, but I had some classes with her and we're still colleagues and friends. I think she went a year while she was a lawyer, without wearing makeup. And she just would sort of periodically update people in this sort of private group about the outcome of that sort of personal experiment. And she got a lot of negative feedback from judges, from, you know, from people that you wouldn't expect to ever make a comment about your appearance. So it is upsetting to me that, you know, the world feels like we need to be presenting ourselves in a certain way in order to be allowed to participate. And I feel like that's, like you were saying, it's definitely something women have to deal with more. Like, men don't have to wear makeup in order to go to work in the morning. I'm sure some men do, but I think in general, generally speaking, if you saw a man without makeup, you wouldn't think anything about it, obviously. So that, you know, it's something that's upsetting and frustrating and, you know, at the right moment, really angering to a social norm that I think a lot of us have to unlearn. I know I do, because it definitely doesn't come naturally to me to think I don't have to look a certain way. You know, I think I haven't done my hair, like I haven't worn my hair down, you know, in, I don't know, months and months. But especially not now that I'm working remotely, mostly. But that's why, is because I'm working remotely and I don't feel like there's an expectation that I look a certain way when I'm at my house. But that suddenly changes if I'm leaving my house to go anywhere, including like to the gym or something. I, you know, have to put on makeup or something. And it just seems ridiculous to me because it's not part of the function of working out. You don't need to have makeup on your face. You have to have your hair put up, but that's about it.
I was talking to a young lady the other day, and after work, she said some of her friends were downtown hanging out, but she didn't want to go because she had a pimple. And I was like, the many things that stops young women or just women in general from mm-hmm. participating in anything can be so simple as just a pimple, you know, and
yeah,
so many opportunities. And she just didn't end up going to have a great time with her friends. She just went home to try to make these pimples on her face like disappear.
So yeah,
be presentable the next day. Like, so
yeah, I think it's, if you think about that, you know, try to step back from, you know, everybody understands that impulse. Like, I understand that impulse entirely, but if you try to step back and pretend like it, you know, you're coming into this from a, I don't know, you're an alien or something like that, that this is, you're studying us from an anthropological standpoint, like, that just seems ridiculous that would be anything that would limit your life experience, but it totally is. I mean, I think about, like, I have, you can kind of see it. My daughter has this thing now where, and it's adorable, so I let her do it over and over again, but she gets so excited when she sees me that she'll grab my hair and like hold it at right, like corners here, and so I'm getting these like broken off pieces, and it's like, it's really bothering me when I go to work, because it's like I can't really hairspray it down or whatever, and it's just, you know, it is what it is. It's the stage that she's at, and it's really cute when she does that. And she does it because she's just so freaking excited to see me, and she just wants to squeeze me as hard as she can. But, you know, it's just wreaking havoc on my hair. But I've gotten really very self-conscious about it, especially like in these meetings, because it'll start to like stick up like that. But I guess the point is that, I mean, I don't know. It is what it is. It's how I look right now. And, but it's not easy to release that I think I have on my mirror something about like a mantra about releasing others' expectations of me. And it's on my mirror because it's something that I can't really do. You know, I'm trying to work on it, but, it takes a long time to unlearn those things, I think. But I think we have to give ourselves space to understand that the reason why we can't wake up overnight and internalize that is because our entire lives we were socialized to feel the opposite. And we were socialized in that way at a time in our lives when it was really, you know, we were very, like our formative years, like when we were children, we didn't even realize we're learning these social norms. So, but I've thought a lot about it because to the extent possible, I mean, I have a daughter and I'd love for her not to feel that way, but I know to some extent she probably will, because she's going to grow up in a slightly different world than I did, but, you know, not, unfortunately not that different. So
I think I started wearing makeup because like when I blush, you can really tell. So part of it is like a comfort thing for me. The woman that you were talking about, the lawyer that did that for a full year, is incredibly strong.
I mean, she's like that about, I mean, she's really very self-affirming and, but I also wonder, I mean, you know, she had a struggle growing up. I know just from comments she's made, you know, I know that she had at some point during the debate about welfare and like benefits to low income families. I mean, she was talking about how that changed her life essentially because her mother and her family benefited from I don't know if it was SNAP, you know, whatever the food assistance or something of that nature. And I mean, obviously that's not my experience. I grew up, you know, much more privileged than that, but I think that she had a younger sister who was much younger, and I know she spent a lot of time helping Ray have a really close bond, but it seems like more of a mother-daughter bond. And she has two daughters now of her own. One of her daughters was born like right after Eva. We were due almost the same day. But she was, she has kind of a mother-daughter bond with her younger sister. So I think, I don't know if it was being a role model or having to be, you know, having to take charge and be confident early in life. I don't know, but she's very much that way. I mean, she's a very confident person, but she also will talk about, you know, the struggle of, you know, having her look tired. And you know, people say that all the time, you look tired or you look, cause when you look washed out or whatever, when you don't have makeup on, it's like, no, it's how I look. It's just, you don't see the enhancement of, you know, the highlighting or the low lighting or whatever. And like I have, you know, sometimes my skin, when I was pregnant, I had beautiful skin. That was one of the few physical benefits of it. But now it's like my normal skin is, I break out a lot. And so I use makeup to hide that. And which obviously makes the problem worse sometimes, but I feel very uncomfortable if I have like acne, you know, that you can see. It makes me feel very uncomfortable and almost like unprofessional in my job if I don't have makeup on to cover that and make it look more even. Like it makes me feel like I'm protected. Like you're talking about, people can see you're blushing. It sort of sounded to me almost like a protection thing, like a shield of some sort. And I sort of feel that way too about my acne and also like my professional persona, because I feel like there's so much, you know, wearing a suit, you know, other types of things are very much like, you know, the expectations of the profession sometimes. And but they can also be a shield against, you know, if you feel insecure sometimes, I think too. But I think the goal is that to know we don't need those things in order to make us deserving of a seat at the table or to be present or to enjoy ourselves or whatever else the case may be. So,
can I say how much I do not like that comment? Like, you look tired. Like, I'm like, really? Yeah. You,
that's so rude.
Why would you ever touch anyone?
That's like, that's almost as bad as when people and you're pregnant and they're like, oh, you're getting so big. And I'm like, and one of my friends made the comment, that stopped being a compliment when you were 10 years old or something like that. And I'm like, right? That's exactly right. Like, why didn't you think about how that sounds? Like, I get pregnant women are super, I got super like sensitive because you just feel like, what is going on with my body? But so I know there's a little extra sensitivity. I'm like, I think anybody could know. But yeah, the tired thing, it's like, unless you're offering me a nap and you have like a bed laid out for me, like, oh, you look tired, here's your napping spot. Like, exactly. Unless you're offering to like get me some sleep, then there's no reason why you should be commenting on if I look tired or not, like, because it's irrelevant, right? And rude.
Do you have anything to solve that?
Yeah, exactly. Are you proposing a solution? Otherwise you're just being rude.
Right. You know, another thing I don't like is the comment, you should smile, because I'm like, ugh. It's not your business if I'm smiling or not. I'm like, one time I was in a city I wasn't familiar where I was going, so I was looking at the map on my phone and trying to find out where to go, and then this construction person was like, smile. I was like, am I just gonna be randomly smiling everywhere I go? Like, you know, like
yeah, it's not what you're there for in that moment. And I think that's another thing, is like, you know, going hand in hand with how we look when we we feel like we have to look a certain way in order to be, you know, in order to be acceptable in a particular space. It's also the, how we act. Like, you know, like if you're not smiling, if you're not friendly, if you're not being flirty, if you're not, you know, I can't tell you how many times, like when I'm, you know, in a professional setting, I mean, even talking to like judges and stuff like that, where there'll be some aspect of that kind of flirty small talk that has to happen. And it just is really grosses me out, to be honest, but it's like a social expectation. And that's, you know, that's really, and it's been really overt before, you know, like, but when I was young, especially when I was younger and not as ready to respond to it as I am now, not as confident about not dealing with that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that is an obnoxious comment, but it's one, you know, women are not, women don't exist in a space for, you know, men's, you know, for men's pleasure or whatever you want to call it, for their interaction. But I think a lot of men feel that you do, like, you're a pretty girl, why aren't you smiling? Like,
right. And there was a construction, like one of his coworkers were walking in front of me, and the coworker thought he said it to him and was like looking around, and then noticed I was behind him and was like, oh, he's talking to you. I was like, no, he's talking to you. Cause I'm like, if you can't say it to another man, don't say it to me.
Exactly. And that's the point. Yeah. If you're not going to be saying it to your male colleagues, and don't say it to me, I'm here to exist for my own purposes. But yeah, we have to internalize that too, but that's a part of the culture that we live into that I think it, you know, it's changing. It will change. It'll continue to change because people continue to have conversations about it. They continue to push back on it, you know, but it's still got, you know, ways to go. And you even see it from other, you know, you see some of that negativity from other women too. So I think that's part of what, one of the biggest things we can do is try to support each other and not, you know, not reinforce those norms to each other. After I got pregnant, I was researching about what, you know, exercise is safe. And as it turns out, exercise is not only safe, it's, you know, it's recommended. And if you're at a high level of exercise before you're pregnant, you know, you should continue that. There's obviously things you can't do, anything that's striking your abdomen, blah, blah, blah. There's things you can't do, but you should stay active. And, you know, you certainly can continue to do a lot of things. There's no reason not to be active. And actually, it's worse for you if you just stop doing any activity. So the point of saying that is that one of the girls at the gym who does jiu-jitsu with me, who has become a friend, she, you know, watched me work out while I was pregnant. And, you know, she and her husband were talking about having a child, and she was, you know, she's really gotten into martial arts, kind of similar to the path I followed, where she just found it and loved it and never really had any background growing up in it. But she was really bummed by the fact that she was thinking, you know, I have to give this up if I have a baby. I have to give this up if I'm pregnant. I can't do, you know, I can't exercise. And she said, she's told me that just watching me and what I've done and worked out, I mean, I wasn't trying to go motivate anybody. I was just going there because I needed it mentally, you know, but watching me box and kickbox and even do jiu-jitsu, you know, later on, I was doing it only with Josh, Eva's dad. But the point is, she was saying that really opened up her eyes, because the family that she comes from, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you'll have to give that up when you're pregnant, or you'll have to, it's like, no, this can be a part of your life forever. You have to modify certain aspects of it when you're pregnant. And I even told her, I said, you know, Josh has been working with me. I'd be happy to work with you if and when you ever get pregnant. Because I, you know, you just need a partner who knows what's safe and what isn't safe. You know, I think I traumatized this young kid at rolling one day, like when I was about maybe 8 or 10 weeks along. I was kind of at the level where I probably should almost stop, but I was not quite ready to stop. And he put me in a body triangle, which is where your legs are locked, like on someone's abdomen, and you squeeze. And he squeezed right up on my stomach, and I just panicked. And the first thing I thought is, I'm pregnant, I'm pregnant. I was like screaming. This kid is like I think he thought like he got me. Like, he was like young and probably like 17, 16 years old. you know, in high school, definitely. And he was just like, you know, right. just like, yeah. I'm so sorry I handled it that way. I should have told you before we started rolling. I just wasn't thinking that he was going to, I knew he wasn't going to be punching me in the stomach, but I was not thinking body triangle. And this kid put me in a body triangle, like, so tight. And the first thing I thought was like, oh, I got to get him off of me. And that was all I thought to say. So anyway,
I'm pregnant.
But yeah, so, but somebody who knows that you're pregnant and what they need to avoid, obviously, I told her like I could help you out. So I think that was, I feel good about that because I feel like that gave her a different perspective on life and fitness while pregnant, like during pregnancy, that she wouldn't have had if she hadn't seen me do that. And I got a lot of negative comments as well, but that was one thing that I'm like, I know I did my research. So I talked to my doctor, and I'm going to listen to my doctor before I listen to somebody who talked to a doctor 30 years ago while they were pregnant. So, you know,
but right. Like, no, studies have come a long way for sure.
Yeah. Things have changed, and that's just what it is. So you kind of took it with a grain of salt. Like, oh, can you do that? Is that safe? I'm like, yeah, it's safe. My doctor said it's safe. Okay. Like,
I'm a good person. I do my research. I'm not going to do
exactly. I am type A. I'm worried about things all the time. Worried about anything that could go wrong. So believe me, I checked.
Well, for all the young ladies, especially the young lady, you already encouraged and inspired her. For all the young ladies out there who will be watching this, what are some encouraging words or inspiration that you have for them?
You know, I would encourage them to, this might seem weird, but I would encourage them to trust their gut. I think that we, as women, for some reason, I think this is another socialization thing. I think we tend to undercut our internal, our feelings and our gut response to things, and we tend to discount it. I know I do, because I'm like, okay, I don't know that it's based on some kind of empirical evidence, so I must be, and especially if someone's telling me the opposite, I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't know what I'm basing this on. But a lot of times human beings take in information without, you know, the subconsciously, without realizing it, you know, so we're putting things together and we're making assessments, kind of processing in the background all the time. So I think that young women especially are taught not to listen to their own internal voice. And I would say, to the extent possible, you know, listen to your subconscious, whatever it's telling you, listen to your gut, whatever you want to call it. You know what's best for you more than anybody else does. I can't really give the advice to say, like, you know, you're beautiful and perfect as you are. Although, you know, that's one thing about having a daughter, having a child, that has changed my perspective. It's made me a lot more appreciative of, like, the beauty of human beings, because I think she's absolutely the most perfect thing I've ever laid my eyes on. And I don't think there's a thing that she could do that change how perfect she is. I don't think she needs makeup. I don't think she needs, and I'll never feel that way. I'll never think she needs to, like, I get like teared up even thinking about her, but like, I don't think she, you know, so I try to, you know, I think there's advice about talking to yourself how you talking to others. And I think that's great advice, because we tell ourselves the worst things sometimes about ourselves. So I think that's advice that I've heard, you know, not everybody that has a daughter that can pretend that they're talking to their daughter like I can, but they can, you know, pretend they're talking to a younger version of themselves, or what they needed to hear as a younger girl, or what they would tell their little sister if they had one, that kind of thing. I think just being kinder to, you know, thinking about ourselves in a more kind way and talking to ourselves in a more kind way is something that I would hope everybody can strive to do. I know it's hard. You know, negative self-talk is an easy cycle to get into. Be nice to yourself. And then whatever it is you want to do, just go for it. You know, you're never too old or too whatever to do whatever you want to do. Like, people, especially nowadays, you can like reinvent yourself a million different times in your life. And so, I mean, there's maybe a few things you're too old to do, but not many. So just go for it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Women in Power Active with my co-host, Erica Mann, and my guest, Jennifer Gross, my sister. I hope you enjoyed it. You can follow me personally. That's at Jacqueline Gross, JACALYNGROSS. I mostly take pictures of the skyline while asking my siblings awkward questions. You can follow UR Sportswear, that's the letter U, the letter R, Sportswear, on all social platforms. You can check out any of our products at ursportswear.com. If you are listening to this and want to watch the video version, you can go to UR Sportswear's YouTube channel and subscribe. Both the audio and video version of this podcast was produced by Jeremy Canaria and edited by me. And if you're new to this podcast and this is the first time you're listening, this is a podcast that is about empowering women and non-binary folks around being active and enjoying being active. We hope to inspire anyone to try something new. A lot of times we don't get exposed to the new type of sports until we get older, and then we feel like we can't try new things. And this is just one of those times where just let go and have fun. So beware, you might get inspired. Feel free to direct message me at Jacqueline Gross and let me know what you're working on and what you're trying out new. I'm excited to hear about it. And welcome. Thank you so much for listening.